welcome to State of Our Workforce Unpacked. My name is Henry Danner, and I'm the Network Manager at the National Fund for Workforce Solutions. Unpacked takes the national conversations from State of Our Workforce and brings them to the ground level, spotlighting how workforce equity shows up in communities across our network. It's where our nationally powered, locally driven ethos comes to life. What happens when a project ends? Funding runs out, reports are done, but what do you do with the learning? How do you keep it alive? How do you take what worked, what mattered, and make it a part of how you keep showing up for workers and communities? This is what we'll be unpacking in this episode. I'm joined by Elise Smith, Director of Employer Programs at Kentuckiana Works, and Carrie Felton, Director of Worker Success at the National Fund, to explore what's been happening in Louisville since the conclusion of our Human-Centered Workforce Services program a few years ago. What did the team at Kentuckiana Works learn, and how are they keeping that momentum going? And maybe most importantly, what can your story teach us about learning, adapting, and pushing toward a more equitable workforce even after a project ends? Carrie and Elise, how are you both doing today?
Good. Thank you, Henry.
Hi, I'm good. Good to see you all.
Great. Yes, it's great to see you all as well. I'm, you know, so eager to learn a little bit more about this project. As you all know, I'm relatively young in my tenure at the National Fund. So, you know, I think this conversation will enlighten me and our listeners a lot about the Human-Centered Workforce Services project. So without further ado, Carrie, I'm going to toss it to you first to tell us a little bit more about this project. You know, what did the Human-Centered Workforce Services project aim to change about how workforce organizations connect with the people they serve?
I am so excited for this conversation and to get a chance to talk about this project. It was a really fun project. And I guess I'll just start by saying the concept or idea for the Human-Centered Workforce Services project really started with a question, or curiosity that we had around worker voice, participant voice, learner voice. And it's something that a lot of folks in our network were talking about and still are talking about, not just how do we better understand what workers need, what job seekers need, so we can, you know, improve their experiences, but how do we actually do that? And so we had heard of this emerging, but it's been around for a long time, human-centered design, which is a methodology approach that's been around for decades, really, and has been used in product design and in educational settings, in healthcare settings, and a lot of different settings. And I would say it's still relatively a novel idea in the workforce development education training systems, although it's growing in popularity. And so we wanted to know, might this methodology, which is really centered around the idea that we, in addition, when we're designing things, that we're thinking about the end user and how someone might use or experience, use a product or experience a service in the design at the front end. So very simply, that's what it means. You could go look up tons and tons of information about human-centered design. But we had a question about if the tools and methodologies, processes within human-centered design might be a way that folks could practically embed what they're learning from workers and learners into the design of their programs and workplaces. So we really, it took place from 2023 to 2024. We selected five of our network partners and their local stakeholders to participate in the project. And we provided them with some technical assistance and consultation and allowed them to select their own workforce challenge they were focusing on and bring a team together to design that and really incorporate the end user, the job seekers, the program participants in the design and improvement of the services that they were implementing there. And so we wanted to know kind of a few things about if we did this, does it actually improve the experience for customers or end users? Does it have an impact on their outcomes, program outcomes, workforce outcomes? And also, is there a part of this that could help advance equity or address some of the inequities that we know exist in our workforce services? And so Kentuckiana Works was one of our network partners that participated in this project. And I think we learned a lot.
Awesome. Awesome. It was great to hear about, you know, how that kicked off. So we saw it play out in Louisville with Kentuckiana Works. So Elise, I would love if you could just maybe tell us a little bit about how you came up with the pilot program for this project. And in your opinion, what made it difficult from, I mean, excuse me, what made it different from traditional workforce outreach efforts?
Definitely. So I'll say every time the National Fund comes up with an idea, I'm definitely on board with it. And this was one of the more fun projects I've been involved with personally. But I'll say another reason that I was so interested in getting involved in this project is the layout of our work shed around the Louisville area. So for folks who aren't familiar, Louisville's on the border of Kentucky and Indiana. We're separated by the Ohio River. That means that our work shed has two different workforce boards, two different states, and, you know, corresponding regulations. And we're also in two different Department of Labor regions. So there are a lot of things that are making the way we do workforce development distinct on either side of the river, even though we have populations that are crossing the river all the time to get to work from where they live. It's not like just Kentuckians work in Kentucky or just Hoosiers work in Indiana, right? So this project really gave us an opportunity to work on a shared problem as two different workforce boards serving two sides of the same region. And each of us thought we had a very clear idea of who we were going to be reaching out to and what that might play out as. Like, I think the folks in Indiana wanted to really focus on the new Americans population. And here on the Kentucky side of the river, we really wanted to center Black women and making sure that they were connected to the public workforce system. However, when we actually got into the design sprint and actually working with job seekers in our region, we found that there were a couple of very strong themes that emerged. The first was that no matter who we were talking about as far as our job-seeking population is concerned, the message about the value that we could bring to their job search efforts was not getting out there. So we really needed to do a lot of work around making sure that we were clarifying that message. And the second thing was that the rural job seekers in our region on either side of the river were the ones who really were having trouble accessing our services. Either they didn't think it was for them or it was just a physical barrier because there's no public transit to get into a career center. And there's like that physical, or I'm sorry, that psychological barrier of, I don't know if I want to leave my home county and go all the way over there, wherever there is, to get these workforce services. So as we were unpacking all of that through the design sessions in the lead up to our first event, we were figuring out ways that we could really make this a more accessible event, both physically and psychologically, and really make people feel welcome at this workforce development, whatever it is. And I would say that's the first thing we were trying to think about. Like, how is this different than our typical outreach? A lot of the outreach that we do is very much focused on, you know, career fairs or career awareness events. And like, that's really the draw that we are trying to create around this. With the event we hosted in Scott County in Indiana, we were very much like, you know what, let's meet people at some neutral location where they might be dropping by anyway, give them, you know, some dinner while they wait and learn about how our services can help them and give them like a primer on what it's like to access our services and really make it a safer proposition for them to go and get help if they need help finding a job or they know somebody who needs help finding a job.
Thanks, Elise. Thank you. So, you know, Carrie talked about where it started on our end. You gave us a quick run through about what it took to get your pilot started. And I love, you know, the whole concept of meeting people where they're at, you know, making sure that they have access to services in a way that feels thoughtful, you know, for their lives and what they've got going on. So that's all great. But we know in the workforce development field, pilots start and they end. Programs start and they end sometimes, right? But the work did not end here, right? It didn't stop once the deadline happened, right? So Elise, maybe you can just kind of walk us through, you know, what made Kentuckiana Works keep going with this project? And how did you apply what you learned through human-centered design to your ongoing outreach?
So first let me say that, you know, we can't do something for the workforce region and only do it in Indiana. So that was a big part of it. We wanted to make sure that we were also figuring out what this looks like on the Kentucky side of the river. So
can I interrupt for a second? Elise, can you just briefly describe the event and how it went? And then
I'm sorry, did I not do that? Yes. Okay. So what we ended up designing was a drive-through event is what we called it. So the idea was we have three different pillars of our message, our value proposition that we wanted to make sure we were driving home for job-seeking customers. So when people entered the event, they would get like a little passport, for lack of a better word, kind of explaining to them what the different stations were. And the first pillar is using our services is like having coffee with an expert. So we had them stop by the first station, get to know some experts, grab a mug, and you know, got them on their way unless they had any other questions. The second pillar of our message is that our services are for everyone. So really driving home the point of the different kinds of services that are available and who they're available to and the different ways you can take advantage of them from where you are in your career journey. And then I think they got a t-shirt or something at that station. And then the last station was we have big data that can really connect you with the local employers in the region in a very actionable way. And at that station is when they got like the full packet of stuff about our workforce systems. And then they were very close to the food tent, which so all of like the nice smelling foods kind of wrapped the bow on the event for them and they could be on their way. I will say that first event, the weather was not working in our favor. It was rainy and gross outside, but we still had way more people come through that event than I think they had in the full year in that county. So it was like really impressive.
Yeah, that's amazing. And it sounds like you came up with a very intentional way to do that outreach and to make sure that people, like even as you described the stages that they went through at the event to get the resources, it seems like there was a lot of thought and intention there. So what lessons, I guess, from that did you take away and decide, hey, we want to try to keep doing this outreach in a specific way because of the response that you saw, maybe even if it wasn't just the first event, if it was like the subsequent ones that came after that, what impressions led you to continue with the effort in the same fashion?
Yeah, we really wanted to replicate that boost in traffic that we saw in a rural county on the Kentucky side of the river. It was something that both of our workforce regions had been struggling with, like how do we increase foot traffic in these more outlying areas? And what does it mean to really serve that population? So we iterated on that first event by, you know, continuing on the drive-through idea, the idea that you don't have to come to a special place in order to get workforce services. But we did make a couple of tweaks from, you know, what we learned about that event. So the initial location was at a trusted community partner on the Indiana side of the river. So they were very supportive of us having the event there, and they were very accommodating with providing amenities for the event. But it just wasn't the place that people were trying to go in those after work hours when we had the event. So we switched the event and the timing on the Kentucky side to be midday on a weekend, and we hosted the drive-through at a grocery store. And again, we had a key community partner there that made all of that possible. But that did change a couple of other things about the event. You know, namely, we weren't trying to give away full meals like we were in Indiana. We were at the grocery store, so we wanted to change our incentive to be relevant to that location. So I think we ended up giving out gift cards for that grocery store for folks who visited the full event. And I mean, I'll say that in the interim, the thing that we actually held on to, because yes, the drive-through events are one thing, but I think the real learning and the real thing that kept us motivated to do this human-centered design kind of work are the actual empathy interviews that we conducted both in the design sessions for the first event, and those really carried through on through now, actually. But really, taking time to talk with people about their career journeys and what were the pitfalls, what were the highlights, you know, what challenges faced you today when you were trying to get to this conversation. That was really enlightening for us. And it felt really strange to think about stepping away from that newfound expertise that we were able to surface through this whole process.
Yeah, that's amazing. And as you're speaking, what I'm hearing a lot of is like you configured something, or you thought you figured out this is the best way to do it, and then you had to make some adjustments here and there to make it even more responsive to the needs of the individuals you were serving. And it sounds to me like, and Carrie, you could correct me if I'm wrong here, that those empathy interviews provided you with a lot of that information to understand the clients and what their needs were and how to ensure that they can get out to these drive-through events. So that is the power, one of the many powers and elements of the human-centered approach to things. But, you know, in our final question, as we close out, I'm wondering, what are the other elements, right, that helped this project to grow a life of its own, right? And what does the success of this project and the fact that you kept it going, what does it say about the way workforce innovation happens? What is the process of taking it from an idea to an actual a service, right? What does that say about how innovation takes place, and how can we sustain that progress to keep the work moving forward, you know, as these projects start and end and get funded and lose funding, things of that nature, right? So this question is for both of you. I'm really just interested in, you know, in your opinions on that.
I mean, well, funding is always helpful. Let me just say that plain and simple.
Of course.
But I will say that workforce innovation happens when you're able to really expand your universe of choice. And, you know, you don't have to necessarily rely on proven strategies. You don't have to rely on promising practices. You can actually start from scratch and say, this is the only thing we know is that there are X amount of people in our region, and we can't make any assumptions about that beyond that number. So let's get in and talk to them and just build something that works. And I mean, sometimes it's feasible, sometimes it's not, I'm sure. But and I think, you know, like we had with these drive-through events, it's not that we were trying to create a series of drive-through events. We wanted to create some meaningful engagement with our job-seeking customers. And that's the thing that we'll be carrying forward, like the different kinds of learnings we had around that when it comes to, you know, being comfortable with like scrappy prototypes of an event, or getting comfortable asking for this expertise. I think it really helps us build empathy on our side for how uncomfortable it is to ask for expertise when it comes to, or when you, from the job seeking perspective.
Yeah, and I'll just add that the themes, the insights that Elise is describing are similar to themes and insights that the other four also reflected back around the learnings and things they were taking away, which is really that, like, there's a mindset shift among folks. And I love the way you phrased it, Elise, about expanding the possibilities, expanding the options, because there are a lot of constraints that we face, you know, funding restraints around this is the amount of funding we have, but also how it can be used and can't be used. This is the timeline. This is how we're going to be measured. So one really important thing that allowed, you know, Elise and the rest of her team there to innovate was not only sort of the technical assistance we provided, but the flexibility around this is the timeline for deliverables that we might usually be used to, but we need time to talk to customers, and that's not always built in. We need a line item to support and support that participant expertise and job seeker expertise that we might not build into our budgets normally, or we might not be allowed to provide in other kinds of projects. So there are some very institutional structural changes that we identified at the end of the project allowed the innovation. And we brought in, you know, leadership at Contagiana Works, and we brought in partners to kind of talk about, like, we were able to do this because we had some flexibility and because we had support. So for this to continue, we will need to continue to build those sorts of things in. And I can say at the National Fund, we're thinking about our subsequent initiatives that we've launched since this project, our Advancing Equitable Career Pathways project and our you know, Energy and Infrastructure Initiative. We are trying to embed some of the learning from this in those as well. And we're thinking about what we call the ripple effects of, you know, applying this methodology or mindset. We have to shift our mindset to design this drive-through event. Well, we can now use our insights that we're gathering from customers and the way that we're shifting our mindsets on our other projects that we have here. So we're trying to integrate that and grow sort of the and hone sort of what pieces really are most valuable to, you know, addressing systemic inequities in the system or addressing certain kind of populations. And we at the National Fund and other projects are continuing to experiment and test and learn, like, you know, promising practices, proven strategies are great. And we want to continue to always question the assumptions that are built in. Like, is this great for everyone? Is this great in this context? Or how do we think outside the box to really focus on the folks who are being left out or not excluded in the benefits? And so I'm really excited, you know, to continue to figure out what the ripple effects might be.
Well, I'm certainly going to say that this is a ripple effect. This conversation and the fact that our viewers and listeners are going to get a chance to also share this knowledge and wisdom back within their communities. So I want to thank you both.
Henry, I'm going to give a plug for our career
navigation. This is the perfect time.
Yes, our career navigation journey maps that are on our website. We did a project with the Project on Workforce at Harvard, where the National Fund team did some really great career journey maps. So just talking with doing exactly what Elise did in her community, talking to workers about their journeys and sort of creating a map so folks can better understand. And the big takeaway from that is that people's career journeys are not linear, but oftentimes our systems and processes for, you know, getting more training, upskilling, getting a job are very linear, step one, step two. Mm-hmm. And so anyone who's curious to hear a little bit more about what Elise and her team did, you know, you can look at our career navigation journey maps, and that kind of that's a human-centered design tool. Mm-hmm. So it gives some insight on that worker experience that you can use to shift your practices.
Thanks for adding that. I had a great time in this conversation. Learned a lot about this project as a whole, and also just how it was applied in with one of our network partners. So, Elise, thank you so much for your dedication to the work, to working and collaborating with us at the National Fund. I want to just thank you again for joining us. Until then, take care.
State of Our Workforce Unpacked is a production of the National Fund for Workforce Solutions. This episode was produced by Joshua Enoch. The music in this episode is produced by Alex Productions. You can find past episodes of State of Our Workforce Unpacked on our website at www.nationalfund.org. Be sure to follow the National Fund for Workforce Solutions on LinkedIn to watch live episodes of State of Our Workforce Unpacked. Don't forget to subscribe to State of Our Workforce wherever you get your podcasts. We appreciate you tuning in and look forward to bringing you more valuable conversations in the future.